You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CKUT.ca on the web. I am Titouan and this is All Things Miguel. It is Monday, February 17th, 2024. It is 11 a.m. and we have a lot to talk about today. We have a full programming for this hour, so I will jump into it right away. First thing on the agenda, we have the big and shocking news that McGill is terminating the position of floor fellows. Until just a couple days ago, McGill had a webpage describing floor fellows as your support system in residence. But not anymore, or at least not next year. So floor fellows are upper year students living in residence to provide guidance and support, etc., to students in residence, especially for first-year students who might be living away from home for the first time. And that comes, you know, with all a whole set of new challenges. And floor fellows acts as peers that students can turn to if needed. On that note, Sequoia and Giselle, member of the news collective here at CKUT, talked with Harlan Hutt, president of AMUSE, that is the Association of McGill University Support Employees, as well as with Graham Scott, who is AMUSE's VP floor fellow. So let's listen to the discussion.
We are discussing the floor fellow layoffs that were kind of abruptly announced. So, of course, we heard yesterday that McGill is going to be ending the floor fellow position at the end of April. Could you tell us a little bit about what floor fellows do and what the day-to-day kind of looks like? You know, what role do they play in residences?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's such a good question because it, like, the question itself and the answer says so much because floor fellows do a huge array of different services within McGill residences and beyond. So I guess, like, off the top of my head, you know, we're there to provide peer support. We're the person who is the face of McGill that you know when you're a first year living alone in the dorm for the first time. Our job is to be there for our residents. So whatever kind of crisis is happening, be it big or small, anytime you need to talk to someone, anytime you need help navigating the McGill bureaucracy, you need help navigating the Quebec healthcare system or the Quebec government, or even the Canadian government, anytime you need help figuring out your international student financing or where to go to the doctor or where to get your passport or any number of these thousands of basic everyday tasks, we're the person you come to who will direct you to the resources that you need. And I mean, more than that, we do community building, we host events, we do check-ins regularly. So a big part of our job is every 2 weeks, we need to be checking in with every resident and have tabs on all of our residents so we know if people are okay and if we need to direct them to resources. I mean, additionally, we're also trained in managing suicidality. We're trained in receiving disclosures of sexual violence. We're trained in first aid. We're trained in administering Narcan. We're trained on what to do in cases of an overdose or intoxication, or you know, how to recognize the signs of depression, mental illness, how to recognize signs of self-harm, how to speak to people who are going through that, how to approach people when we see those signs. But I think ultimately we are there to be the human face of McGill for these people in residence, to help them navigate their first year living away from home in a residence, which is, you know, it's a massively, you know, impactful time in your life. And those connections we make by, you know, being part of that time are, you know, lifelong. And we create communities and residents that literally last for lifetimes and touch thousands of people.
Yeah. And just a quick follow-up. So, I mean, on the Reddit discourse, I've been looking through some of the threads, And there seems to be like kind of a split discourse where people are like, I loved my floor fellow. I couldn't imagine, you know, residents without them, saying how like incredibly helpful and valuable they were to their time there. And then you'll also see a lot of comments saying, no, they weren't really that useful. Like, I feel like it's not a big deal, or like it's so unfair that they get paid and they get cheap housing. Like, I mean, what, like, are there any kind of like misconceptions, I guess, that you would want to clear up? Or like, what do you make of that discourse?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really interesting. I mean, I think to start, contextualizing that, I mean, obviously, in any kind of forum, there's always going to be, dissenting voices. There's always going to be negativity. I mean, what we can say is that, like, even just on those Reddit threads, we've seen overwhelming support of the role of floor fellows. And if you really look at which comments are getting upvotes, which comments are getting engaged with, it's the people who are saying, no, this is essential, we need floor fellows. I think in terms of the, some of those voices who are saying, well, my floor fellow didn't really do very much. My floor fellow didn't really do much for me. I didn't need my floor fellow. I think that I would really invite people who are feeling that way to consider the things that went on behind the scenes that maybe you didn't see. So I know that when I was a resident, in my first year, I just moved. I was living in Solon Hall. It was my first time living away from home. I didn't really have a very good sense of what my floor fellow at the time did. All that I knew was that she was there for me two or three times throughout the year when I really needed her, and that made such a tremendous difference to me. And then the funny thing was, when I later became a floor fellow, I became her colleague. And that was when I realized all the things, the crazy things that had been going on behind the scenes on my floor, that she'd been dealing with. Stuff like, suicidality, serious mental health problems, eating disorders, just, to name the those kind of really big things that stand out. I mean, part of being a floor fellow is being able to identify who needs your help, and who is, kind of doing okay. And I'm really glad to hear that, there are some people who didn't need the support of their floor fellow, because that's actually really great. I'm glad that things were going well for you and that you didn't need that resource. But I've personally never needed an ambulance in my life. I'm really glad we have ambulances. I've never needed, legal aid or any of these other, hundreds or thousands of other kind of social services that exist out there and people who do really important things. But I'm still glad they're there because I know that one day I might need them, and I know that they still make a tremendous difference, even if they don't make a difference to me.
Yeah, that is such a good point. I think for everyone to be reminded to reflect back that, even if you didn't use a resource, there's still a reason why it exists. But kind of going back to some of the misconceptions that Sequoia was pointing out on the Reddit threads, what does like a standard floor fellow contract look like? Because people sometimes assume that the accommodation is fully paid for by McGill, and I'm not personally even sure entirely what the contract or that division looks like. Can you elaborate a bit for
Yeah,
us, please?
I can absolutely talk about that. So, I mean, one thing right off the bat is that myth that floor fellows receive free accommodation, which is just absolutely not true. So, floor fellows actually pay for our accommodation in the form of deductions from our wages. So, we are actually charged the maximum amount that an employer can charge their employees for accommodation, as given in the Act Respecting Labor Standards from the Quebec Civil Code. So, in fact, McGill actually charges floor fellows the maximum they can legally. I think that in terms of thinking about, well, okay, yeah, yes, we're still getting subsidized accommodation. The reason that we receive subsidized accommodation in these residences is because, by nature, this is a live-in position. And in order to do our jobs, having a room and a place to live in that residence is, you know, it's indispensable. You know, if I was working at an, you know, a 9 to 5, you know, a more normal desk job, and my job is, you know, data entry, you know, my employer is going to provide me with a desk and a keyboard and a laptop and the tools I need to do that job. And the job of the floor fellows is to be there, you know, at 4 in the morning, at the middle of the night or in the day, to be just a knock away or a text away, and to really see our residents regularly and to like really be part of their lives in a really meaningful way. And in order to do that, we need to live there. That's why we're live-in staff. And in terms of being live-in staff, you know, I'd also invite people to who are thinking about floor fellows have it so cushy, to think about the things we give up by choosing to live in McGill residences. You know, in a lot of cases, I know this is in my case, floor fellows have very little privacy from our residents. So, you know, in upper residents and RBC now, for example, floor fellows share, you know, bathrooms with their students. You know, we shower with our students. We brush our teeth with our students in the morning. We see our students when we're coming back at night. So there really is no work-life separation. And the other thing to consider is that, you know, we are very limited in terms of how we can use that space. We're still bound by all the rules of living in residence. So we have very strict rules about when we can bring guests over. Anytime a floor fellow wants to have more than 2 guests over, they actually have to notify their manager and be approved. So for people who are out there thinking, you know, floor fellows have it so cushy, why don't you just stop complaining and go live in an apartment? I invite you to try living in an apartment where you need to notify your landlord 24 hours advance if you want to have people over. Yeah, and I think that, you know, going back to that idea of us being live-in staff, I really want to stress this because floor fellows being live-in staff is what makes us different from all of the other services and student support networks available at McGill. You know, services like OSFIRS and the Wellness Hub and the LWAS, these are incredible services and they're run by really incredible, dedicated people. But the people working in those offices do not live with the first years. They don't have their, you know, there's no way they could have their hand on the pulse of, you know, everyday residence life the way that floor fellows can. And there's no way that any of those offices can provide the sort of flexible, always accessible on the ground and personal and intimate support that floor fellows do provide.
Yeah, and I just want to reflect that. I just want to paraphrase a situation that's happened somewhat recently in the past couple weeks in terms of a situation with students. I'm just going to paraphrase for the like anonymity of the student, and so McGill doesn't like come down on us for breaching any kind of confidentiality. But I just wanted to say that we had a situation not too long ago that it was essentially a student was, or I think 2 students were extremely drunk and needed assistance. And of course we were called, and instead of, I'm sure this distinction has been made, but we have at McGill residences, we have Protection Patrol, which is in-house McGill security, who is trained by McGill. They've been here for a while, and they are honestly, they're fairly good at their job, but there's like a limited amount of them. Like we only have maximum of 2 in new res, and that's for a residence of 700 plus people. So, but I just want to clarify that I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about last night. It wasn't last night. It was, when was it? Like a couple, I don't know. It was in the last couple weeks, but, MCERT was called to a situation. And when MCERT is called to a situation, McGill security usually arrives to that situation. And McGill security is usually a private contractor or a third party that's being paid by McGill. And I just wanted to note that in that situation, floor fellows were expected to basically handle the entire first aid until actual MCERT got there. And until the ambulance was called basically, and until first aid was called. And not only that, but they're expected to do basically not just first aid, but but the entire kind of care process of like reassurance, making sure they're okay, and being like a peer support, like resource. And McGill can say all it wants about its hiring residence life facilitators. It's hiring more people to kind of like make that experience like the same of like having events and stuff. But floor fellows are not like just event hosters or people who put up posters or people who decorate halls. We're people who deal with a lot of shit, and we deal with like people vomiting. We deal with kids like overdosing, and we deal with like people who have been assaulted or people who know who that have their friends have been assaulted. So I just want to put it out there that like, we are not just like this, like people who host events. We're not just people who are there to like sit in rooms and like, you know, and occupy space. Like we do a lot of like really difficult work that I think we have only ever made very like reasonable demands to be compensated for. And I think McGill is showing it has absolutely callous disregard for by getting rid of us. And yeah, sorry, Graham.
Yeah, I think you brought up a really good point there, stressing how much we do. And something I just want to, you know, reiterate on that is, as floor fellows, we are bound by confidentiality. So the vast majority of the really sensitive and difficult and important stuff we do not talk about. You will never, you know, and if we're handling it properly, you will never see it. But that doesn't mean it's not happening behind the scenes. And part of the, you know, the work of this role is the emotional regulation it takes to be dealing with all of these things, to be supporting all these people individually, and to be calm and collected and process our feelings about it while upholding confidentiality and ensuring that the appropriate steps are taken. And when we're doing our jobs, a lot of the times that means you don't see us doing the most important things.
So I saw that, you know, there's going to be 60 odd floor fellows who will now be out of work at the end of April. What impact will this decision have on the current floor fellows who are going to be put out of work at the end of this term?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, obviously, you know, it's devastating for us. There was no warning for this. We were basically called into a one-way Zoom meeting where we couldn't unmute our mics or turn our cameras on, and we were read a script from the Associate Director of Residence Life informing us that the floor fellow role was being abolished. There was no space for comments, no space to speak, no space to even speak to each other. And that meeting was finished after 8 minutes. So obviously this came as a huge shock to us. And there has been a lot of, you know, a lot of really emotional responses from a lot of people. You know, floor fellows really, really care about this. I mean, beyond this being, you know, just an invaluable service we provide, and a service we really care about. You know, what I can tell you from personal experience knowing floor fellows is that a lot of us, myself included, rely on this position as a really crucial kind of work study position during our degrees, because we don't have external funding. So in my case, it will not be possible for me to complete my graduate degree without going into pretty significant debt now because of the elimination of this position. And I think that's, you know, that's a widely felt impact amongst the floor fellows, you know, amongst this current cohort. What I can say on that is also that being a floor fellow is a really, you know, it's a really exceptional way to develop a unique set of professional skills, because you do so much in the course of this job. You have to be incredibly flexible. And so many people, you know, of the hundreds, probably thousands actually, of people who have been floor fellows over the decades, tons of them are now working as, you know, doctors, as counselors in these front-facing support positions. And floor fellowing is a, you know, a position that prepares you for that. You know, this is something we've seen because we put the word out to this vast network of former floor fellows and hall directors and residence life managers going back decades. And overwhelmingly and universally, this is what we heard, is that this is, you know, this position has been a huge pillar of the McGill community, and it's being, you know, just abolished unilaterally. And I think an unfortunate result of that is that McGill is going to continue, particularly in light of the rising cost of living, to become less and less accessible to students who don't have, you know, the really significant external financial backing that it takes to be here now.
Yeah.
So that's one of the impacts that's going to be really keenly felt.
And post 8-minute meeting, have you had any communication with McGill? Have you heard anything about the policy, any other details about whether it's going to be indefinite or if it's going to be only for the next?
We have been told that it's indefinite, that the position's being permanently abolished. The floor fellows themselves haven't actually received any kind of written communication. All that we've received was a department-wide email that went out, where buried about two-thirds down in the fine print was a notice that floor fellows were being eliminated.
Okay, and going back to the importance of the role of the floor fellows for residence experience, there's concern from parents that the safety of their kids in residences are going to be jeopardized when the floor fellow role is abolished. Do you think McGill had done any consultation with parents, other stakeholders, and what would you say to prospective students and parents following this decision who are considering McGill, considering going into residences at all?
So I can't speak to what kind of consultation McGill may have done. Obviously, the floor fellows weren't consulted. The numerous of other resident staff we work alongside, so the protection patrollers, the front desk, the porters, the dining hall staff, they were not consulted on this decision, is what we know. You know, in terms of what I would say to parents of prospective students, I mean, I think it's really important to consider that McGill now, in wake of this decision, is going to be left as one of the very few major universities in North America that has an extensive residence system that does not have a peer support system in residence. You know, having, be they RAs or DONs or floor fellows or any of the labels you want to apply to the position, peer support in residence is a decades old, well-established, you know, system for a good reason. It's because it works.
So I heard that Student Housing and Hospitality Services recently conducted a departmental review of its services and reviewed the floor fellow service. Were you like aware or part of that review? And is this, you know, like, is this the reason that the floor fellows are being laid off, do you think?
So we weren't part of that review. We were aware that something like that was happening, because they have laid off, I'm sure Graham has mentioned this, but they laid off, six other MUs positions, in residence. So three at Solon Hall and three at Bishop Mountain Hall. Those are front desk positions. And also, we were not kind of informed about that. We were informed that they were, going through some sort of a like process of like figuring out what they were going to be doing next year in terms of floor fellows, but we weren't kind of consulted about that. Unsurprisingly, they just kind of brought us into a meeting like 3 hours beforehand.
Yeah. Without taking away from the really crucial work that, you know, floor fellows do, would you say that there is anything that could be improved with the floor fellow service? Like if McGill decided to reinstate the floor fellows, would you do anything differently, or do you feel like support is lacking in some areas? What's your make of this?
Yeah, I think that question is interesting because it actually ties back into the reason that floor fellows unionized in the first place. So, for many years, especially when McGill residences were under Flo Tracy, floor fellows and McGill residences and kind of the structure by which decisions were made was much less top down. So, you know, a decade ago, floor fellows had a real seat at the table in terms of determining what are the policies in residence? How do we best support students? What can we do? You know, and even up until COVID, so in the year that I was first hired to be a floor fellow in 2020, the first stage of the floor fellow interview was actually a carousel interview with other floor fellows. So in order to be invited for an interview with the managers to take the position, you first had to be interviewed and vetted by, you know, all these other people who were doing the job. And so I think that's just, you know, it's a small example, but it shows how in years past, floor fellows were really, you know, we were really respected as capable of making these important decisions and worthy of having a voice at the table. And what I think is very, you know, unfortunate is that in recent years, you know, over the last decade, especially since COVID, we've seen a really dramatic undermining of, you know, floor fellows having a voice and having a seat at the table. Floor fellows don't make policy anymore. Floor fellows are not invited to give our feedback. You know, big, significant changes in residents' rules and guidelines. Like this year, for example, they have banned any consumption of alcohol in public spaces, even including, you know, a situation where council has set it up and received an alcohol license. So that is a big decision that was made with zero consultation of the floor fellows, even though we have floor fellows who have actually been floor fellows at McGill for longer than any of our current managers have been in their positions. And I think it's really telling that management doesn't appreciate what we do because they don't see it, and they don't see us as, you know, being capable and able to take on those leadership roles within the organization of student housing. So I think that what both parties would really profit from, and what, you know, overall the actual residents in first year would most well profit from, is that, you know, McGill administration actually grants the floor fellows respect and actually acknowledges the, you know, the institutional memory and the knowledge and the experience that we have, and recognize that we know what we're doing and that we can be empowered to do this well, you know, and that basically that we deserve to have a voice in McGill Student Housing as an organization about how we can best serve our residents.
Yeah, for sure. And I know that there's an AMUSE general meeting this Friday. Is it this Friday on the 24th, I believe?
It's this Wednesday, the 21st.
Oh, okay.
It's from 5:30 to 9 at Alicoc 26.
And who's the meeting open to? And, you know, will the layoffs be discussed?
Yeah, I would say without a doubt. I think it'll definitely be Graham, and to a lesser extent me, leading that discussion, because all of the execs have a point in the meeting where we're giving a report that's been composed over the course of the last year. So mine will include that, but I think the primary one that's going to include that is Graham, because that's Graham's role within AMUSE. And I think definitely we're going to try and mobilize as many floor fellows as possible to come to the AGM, because I think now more than ever, it's very important that that Unit B, especially floor fellows, are mobilized so that we can, first of all, strategize about what we're going to do. And second of all, make sure that any kind of contact we have with the media, with McGill, is like with the consent of like our membership. So ensuring that that's democratic. Our press release we sent out was approved by floor fellows in a meeting. So that's all been kind of approved by them. And I want to make sure that as many of them know and are in the loop about what's happening as possible. Because we had after they dropped that bomb on us on Thursday, we had a meeting with the floor fellows right after in Zoom that was attended by around 37 people out of a hiring unit of, or a bargaining unit of 64 or 65. So that's obviously more than half. And I think it reflects that how engaged the floor fellows are in general, but definitely it'll be talked about in our meeting for sure. I don't think it couldn't be.
Yeah. So this is, sorry if this is a basic question, but your collective agreement with McGill ends in May 2025. Does McGill's decision to like abolish the position not conflict with, you know, like the obligations that are outlined in the collective agreement? Or like, what's the legality? Or like, what is that? What is the use of that contract? I guess no.
No comment pending discussion with our lawyer.
Got it. Cool.
I'd say you definitely have the right idea.
Okay. Got you. And then just last question for you guys. What are the next steps here? What should the McGill community be looking out for?
So what I would ask of the McGill community, two things actually. So one of them is right now there's a Google form that we set up like an hour after this was announced, inviting people to share their experiences of a floor fellow. So if a floor fellow impacted your life in some way, please fill out that form and tell us about it so that we have that documentation that we can bring to show floor fellows do important work and we make a real difference. The other thing that I think we can ask of the McGill community is to be ready for us when the time comes. Keep an open ear for updates and be ready to lend us your support.
Yeah. I mean, hey, he said it. The fight is not over.
And we are back. You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CKUT.ca on the web. What you just heard was an interview made by Sequoia and Gazelle, member of the News Collective here at CKUT, and they talked with representatives of the union Amuse at McGill University about the termination of the floor fellow position in residence halls. McGill has not officially communicated about the reasons for terminating such position, but we can only infer that it is their latest effort in cutting costs in preparation for the tuition hike increase, which is forecasted to have a big impact on the financial state of the university. So yeah, it's we've talked a lot about the tuition hike, and it's I want to say it's not going to impact only students as in the way that they are going to pay more tuition, but it's also going to impact their life at the university in terms of what services the university can provide. Right now, McGill University is seeking to replace the floor fellow position with another type of student position that would not live in residence. So, like, technically, they will be less accessible to students in residence, just physically. And yeah, so that's the latest news, and we are going to continue with a short music break and be back soon after.
Feeling so nice. I noticed your hair on the sweaters I wear. Got me humming all those love songs you like. Dreaming at night, are you there? Oh,
I'm not coming down. I'm not coming down. Oh, I'm not coming down. Where you are. Girl, I know I never told you. I just wanna feel you closer and show you what you really mean to me. I'm comfortable around your energy on a rainy day. Oh, you take my pain away. You've always been there for me when I need you. The t-shirts you wear.
Québec cherche du monde pour travailler cet été comme guide dans ses centrales et centres d'interprétation partout au Québec. Du monde qui a envie de faire partie d'une équipe énergique qui contribue à changer le monde. Du monde qui souhaite vivre une expérience inoubliable qui ouvre des portes. Tu aimes t'exprimer en public et tu cherches un emploi bien rémunéré? Joins-toi à l'équipe. Postule d'ici le 3 mars au hydroquebec.com/emploi-guide.
TD and Production Nuit d'Afrique present Women of the World Raise Their Voices, 5 special concert evenings from February 1st to March 8th. Don't miss the grand premiere. Lidl's Cameroonian Slam, Brazilian songwriter Bia Pereira, Lorraine Classen's 40-year career anniversary, The Roots Daughters Sound System, and Cora Virtuoso, Sona Jobarte. Discover the full program on festivalnuitdafrique.com. This is a CKUT co-presentation.
I'm on point, baby, twice again. I'm on point, baby, twice again. I'm on point, baby, twice again.
Twice again.
Look. Slowly realizing that I'm a sky dweller every time I put the time in. What? Them shorties recognize it, okay. So they flock to my section, yeah. When they see my car arriving.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm not just rolling for the pleasure, cause temporary fades and I'm focused on forever.
Right.
And now it's over for them heifers. Being closer to you done brought me closer to myself.
You know that you're the one for me. Them people don't mean none to me. She always tell me twice again. Be mindful of your company. Why laying on me comfortably? She want another round with me. I did it to her twice again. She swear I do it to her every time.
This is the year that I come and set the record straight. Let's only cheddar great, time for me to celebrate. We the Jeffersons, moving to a better place. So get the step and you not focused on this elevation. Never hating, never by my lonesome. Looking like a blessing, baby, I know that you want one. I don't know it all, but I'm wiser and I'm colder. No more hesitation, no more hold ups.
You know that you the one for me. Them people don't mean nothing to me. She always tell me twice again.
Be mindful of your company. Why laying on me comfortably? She want another round with me. I did it to her twice again. She swear I do it to her every time. Oh, I did it to her twice again, my friend. She swear I do it to her every time. And I stay crazy on her mind, cause I got it going on, on and on and on. On and on and on. On and on
and on. Tu as explosé ton forfait cellulaire pour écouter ton ami ventiler sur ses parents et sur son acné?
Tellement.
Avec ton écoute, tu as de l'avenir en santé et services sociaux. Trouve ta place sur québec.ca/carrière en santé. Un message du gouvernement du Québec.
You're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CKUT.ca on the web. This is Anthix McGill, I am T-Twan, and we just heard some great Canadian music. The first song was Cloud by John Vinyl from Toronto, and then we heard... Twice Again by Planet Giza from Montreal. So Anthix McGill is also a place to showcase student journalism, and this is what we are going to do with the second part of our show today. We have Kai, another member of New News Collective, who went to the protest Hands Off Rafa. And he interviewed students and people there who participated in this emergency rally that was asking for an end to the assault on Rafa. So let's listen to that.
1.4 million people who have been displaced and are now living in overcrowded tents and apartment buildings.
My name is Thiago. Montrealer for 10 years now, Brazilian by origin.
Okay, awesome. And why are you here today?
Without knowing what else to do, we just come to the streets to seek justice, to meet people that are not blind to what's happening, and to do whatever we can to change. Being in Canada, an imperialist country that is in the center of what's happening, it's our duty to be here today. So that's what we do.
Do you feel like over the course of this, of the situation in Palestine, your opinion on Western countries and Western imperialism has changed or evolved?
It doesn't come as a surprise. It's always shocking to see the way these countries work. On a personal level, no, that hasn't changed my opinion on Western countries, but I think it did for the most, widespread media. It did have an impact. The violence, the level of how low these countries can get, how Israel is acting, and how these countries are their stance. This is definitely... opening people's eyes.
How do you view the Canadian government's reaction to... How do you view the Canadian government's actions with regards to this conflict?
Like I said, it's not a surprise, but it's underwhelming. It's certainly not enough. Canada is a country in the center of the capitalist state. It has... it would have a lot of geopolitical power to create... meaningful actions to change what's happening, to provide more support, and we're not seeing nearly enough from the Canadian government.
Yeah, I'm Brazilian, and I'm a public healthcare worker from the public Quebec healthcare system.
Okay, awesome. How long have you been here in Montreal?
I've been in Montreal for 4 years now, but I've been in Toronto and Vancouver before as well.
Okay, great. And why are you here today?
Well, I'm here because, you know, the situation is in Palestine is escalating every day. Genocide is happening. So you have to be here in solidarity with people there, the resistance in Palestine, with the groups that are organizing, like, demonstrations in Montreal and across Canada every week, every weekend. This is a moment that we all have to be there. We all have to show up. This isn't a moment to remain silent.
Okay, and do you see what's the movement for Palestine right now? Do you see this as part of any sort of wider movement? Or how would you characterize it?
Well, you know, the struggle for a free Palestine, it hasn't started like yesterday, right? This is something that's been 75 years or so of resistance. Of course, based on what's happening more recently, the movements are definitely like organizing more and more actions, building solidarity from like different regions, right? So the groups here in Montreal are connected with the groups in different parts of Canada, US, Europe. So as we see these movements and groups more coordinated, we do see a lot more actions, you know. It can be just like a demonstration, a rally, but these groups are also like blocking bridges, ports, and all kinds of different actions, which are all very important. And we have to keep building this to apply more pressure on our provincial governments and also the federal government in Canada as well. And even like for people who are unionized, they have to also organize locally and apply pressure on their unions as well, on the executives, because the unions have a very important role here to apply the pressure on the governments as well. The unions, they should do that. This is part of like what a union should be doing now.
Do you think the unions have been good in taking action on these issues or not at all?
Sorry, can you?
Do you think the role of unions has been sufficient in pressuring the governments, or would you like to see them do more?
Well, we're seeing more and more, like, let's say, actions recently. Like, just today I saw that PSAC, QPW, which is the Union for Postal Workers, the Steelworkers Union, they've sent a letter to the federal government to demand that Canada go back and continue to fund the UN organizations, especially the one providing aid to refugees in Palestine. So
right.
This is what
UNRWA,
unions,
right?
So this is what unions should be doing, right? And even participating at the rallies, sending all kinds of letters and statements to the governments, telling them that they cannot support genocide, that they have to start a arms embargo for Israel right now, and to sort of like bring awareness to their membership as well.
And I know this is a tough question, but how do you think you could see peace come to this region of the world and for this conflict to end? What's the way forward in your view?
You know, the only solution is a Palestinian state, you know, and to the for the rest of the world acknowledge that, to stop exporting arms and funding the genocide, the Israeli apartheid. So pretty much is recognizing the right for self-determination for Palestinians, respect their land, respect their authorities, and respect like a Palestinian state. That's all.
Do you think a Palestinian state can exist alongside an Israeli state?
Under a Palestinian state, they can all definitely like be under the same.
So there should be one state of Palestine, sort of a one-state solution where everyone has equal rights and equal voting power, etc.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure people would be totally fine living under the same state, a Palestinian state, and with like all sort of like, you know, sort of like a law and structure that would allow these people to live together, I'm pretty sure.
Okay, awesome. Okay, very interesting. Thanks a lot for speaking.
Thanks, man.
Here you go. All right, let's start from the top again. So, could you introduce yourself?
Dennis Cossin.
Awesome. And why are you here today, Dennis?
Where should I start? Rafa. So I believe the figure is 1.4 million people are in Rafa, which is by the Egyptian border. I believe the normal population of Rafa is 220,000, something like that. So now it's increased to 1.4 million. Living in refugee tents with no supplies from no humanitarian supplies. People are starving, people are cold, people are sick, people are dying, and Israel is responsible. You don't need to pull a trigger or to throw a bomb to kill people. You can starve them to death. You can keep them from shelter and make them freeze to death. And this is what's happening. It's, I'm speechless. I'm really speechless.
Yeah.
Yes, my name is Jihad. I'm still a student at university.
Awesome. I'm also a student at McGill. And why are you here today, Jad?
Well, we were supposed technically to have class, but obviously it's a call for action, so we saw the call for action and decided to come here.
Sorry?
We decided to come here to support the cause, obviously, with what's going on in Rafah.
Okay. And what's your message, and who do you hope hears your message?
Generally, at this point, we just all want to be heard because it just feels like we're falling on deafened ears. And we know that we're technically being heard, but I think we just have to keep going until we tire them out before our side even has a chance to tire out. But I don't think that's going to be a possibility now.
First of all, why are you...
I'm here to do anything I can to support the people of Palestinian people in Gaza. People being occupied just feels like there's not much to do like in the day to day, so I want to just join this and yeah.
Who do you hope hears your message?
The Trudeau and fucking Biden and the people who can actually put an end to this genocide. I mean Netanyahu, yeah. Like it's all just the people in power who are just turning a blind eye.
Do you have any hope that the people in power will come to their senses and listen to the voice of all these people here?
I mean, things like this give me hope, definitely. But I mean, you know, we're seeing it just continually get worse and worse, and now it's at like a critical point where we don't know what's gonna happen. So I don't know.
There's such a diverse coalition of people here right now. What do you think about the diverse set of people that come to these protests?
I think it's so beautiful. I think if anything, you know, you look around and there's so many beautiful people and we all just want people to live and get rid of the occupation and like get rid of this fucking joke of the system that just supports white supremacy and colonization, and it needs to end.
Palestine is my home country. My grandfather were kicked out of it. So I don't have the right to go back. Even though my parents were born there, but they left when they were young. So I feel their pain. And it's even if it was not my country, my own home country, it's justice. It's what you feel that things that it doesn't look right, killing the children and how can I say, starving the people, let them die out of hunger, no water, no food, no electricity. It doesn't go, this is not the human rights, this is not the international law, it's against all the human rights.
Do you still have family in Palestine?
Yeah.
Have you heard from them at all?
No.
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 And where were you born?
I was born in Saudi Arabia.
In where?
In Saudi Arabia.
Saudi Arabia, okay. And then how long have you been in Montreal?
7 years.
7 years, okay. And what do you think about, you know, Canada is your new country that you moved to, right? What do you think about Canada's response to this situation?
As any other, let's say, country that has its own policy and respect for its people, to stand with the right, with the justice, and with the civilians, and with the right of people to live and be respected in their lives, and not to be killed out of nowhere for no reason. Just like the people that we see, a lot of journalists are killing. For example, today, a journalist were killed by a drone. So it was going directly. It's a lot of stories. There are a lot of stories you cannot talk about everyone. But for example, the Hen story, if you have heard about it, she's 6 years old, that she was fleeing out of her residence with her family in the car. And then they started, the Israeli soldiers started, killing her family.
This was in Gaza?
This was in Gaza. And you can go and search. It's Hind Rajab. She stayed. She was calling for help. She called the Red Cross for help. And they sent an ambulance for her. And then they lost the contact with the ambulance and with her. And then, so after 12 days, they found their bodies.
There's been a lot of focus on the rise of anti-Semitism. Do you feel like there has been an equal focus on hate against Palestinians?
Unfortunately, no. No, yesterday there was a stab. There is an accident in USA. They call it a hate crime. They didn't call it as Islamophobic or something like this. By the way, Arab is also Semitic. If you search, so anti-Semitic includes both, but the general understanding, it's why the word means something and people interpret it in another way.
It's an old word, so that's,
It means both. Arab also are Semitic, but they would, it's not considered, unfortunately.
As a Palestinian Canadian, what's the light at the end of the tunnel here? What do you think the path forward is for peace in Palestine and for a resolution to this conflict?
I believe the solution is what it was before 1948, where people lived together, Jewish people, Arab, Muslims, Christians, they were all living in peace. We didn't have this conflict before 1948. So I believe end of occupation is the solution.
Okay, and so that would mean one state for Israelis and Palestinians? Or one state for people of all religions to live?
To live all together with the same rights. So you don't live in a country that gives some people rights that doesn't give it to others.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you. For CKUT Community Radio in Montreal. Yeah, okay, awesome, me too. So first of all, could you just introduce yourself?
My name's Ben. I'm a third-year political science student at McGill.
And why are you here today, Ben?
Well, I only heard that it was happening a few hours ago, but I've been to a couple Palestine protests before, and I just think it's important to show up and it's the more people come, the better, I think. So that's what I would say, yeah.
What message are you hoping to send to Justin Trudeau or Joe Biden or whomever?
Well, yeah, end the occupation, ceasefire now, and divest from Israel, yeah. Those are the three main things I'd say, yeah.
How do you think peace can be achieved in this region?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it'd take a lot, I guess. It's a hard issue. I mean, Israel has to obviously pull out of all Palestinian land, and there needs to be a Palestinian state. I mean, that's the only way there can be peace, because, I mean, that's what they're demanding, and that's what needs to be done. I mean, ideally, in an ideal world, you'd have a one-state solution where everyone can live in peace. I don't see that happening. You know, I think the realist solution is a two-state solution. Palestinian state. There's no meddling from Israel or anything like that. That would be my ideal solution.
And are you originally Canadian or American from Montreal?
I'm American. I'm
American. Yeah. So as an American, how do you see the American government's response to this?
Well, yeah, I think it's like even worse than the Canadian one, arguably. I mean, obviously America is Israel's main sponsor, has been for decades. And yeah, I think, I mean, public opinion is changing. So hopefully there will be a change, a tide change coming, you know, politically. I mean, I think Biden is not a politically viable candidate anymore, especially after this, because no young people are going to want to vote for him. So I think it's terrible, and I also think it's terrible what they've done, but I think people are starting to wake up to it, hopefully.
So you think that the issues in Palestine are going to affect Biden's electoral prospects significantly?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think like he's kind of unpopular anyway, so even a small difference makes a big difference, you know, in a way.
On air, you're listening to CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CKUT.ca on the web. That was All Things McGill. Yeah, it is 11:59 and it's time for me to say goodbye. Have a great week, everyone. And we're going to finish up with a song. It's going to be Roth Throat by YTK.
I'm on some shit, huh? Yeah.
Your issues, I got tissues in this Hennessy. Most of my problems drowned in liquor. I can't smoke no weed. I would if I
Tennessee. Yeah, you got your issues. I got tissues and it's Tennessee. You got your issues. I got tissues and it's Tennessee. Most of my problems drowned in liquor. I can't smoke no sleep. I would if I could. Would that lead through up anxiety? Yeah, you got your issues. I got tissues and it's Tennessee.
Paying for the sober writing shit I really don't care about. And I might just roll another spliff and take it right to the mouth. I need something salty and some Hennessy. Develop my gout and post it up on the couch. Fuck niggas talking about. And I'm bored of shit and ain't got nothing to do. Can't do it sober if you're feeling me. Like baby, slide through. You're coming over lazy, lazy. So baby, you just gon' have to bend it over. But you never can to show you that it ain't no nigga code. Still bored when she lead out. Delivery, no Kiko. I might just hit the Stokos and crack up for a loco. Then post up with the bros and maybe run up the 2K. Shepherd her like a souffle. Jet like Rude to Boudet. I be in my own zone for real. And I was always on my ass when I blew green teal. But she just wanna see me eating like a happy meal. And so do Pop. So I live it like I die. Shot Pop from Red Dot. Hold on.
You got your issues, I got tissues, and it's Tennessee. And most of my problems drowned in liquor. I can't smoke no weed, I would if I could. But that leave through up anxiety. Yeah, you got your issues.